Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Scott Gessler. To my immediate left is Sharon Eubanks, who is the Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, and she is the designee of the Director of the Office, Dan Carton. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. A few general remarks I'd like to make about procedures. For anyone who wishes to testify today, there are sign-up sheets on the table by the back. This is a recorded meeting. It's also broadcast over the Internet. When you testify, please identify who you represent. And basically, whenever the board or the title board considers a new measure, there are three steps that we follow. First, I'll provide an opportunity for the title board members to make sure that they understand the proposal. So I'll give them an opportunity to ask questions of the proponents. Then second, the board will consider whether it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily requires us to examine whether the proposal complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then finally, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then the third step is to work on setting those titles, and we typically work off of a staff draft, copies of which are on the table by the back door. I think we do have perhaps suggestions from the proponents today, as well as one of the title board members. If we get to that third step, then we may have competing drafts to look at. If anyone is dissatisfied with the decision today, they may file a motion with the Secretary of State's office within 7 days, and then a motion that hearing will be heard at the next available meeting of the title board, which by statute meets on the first and third Wednesdays of every month. I should mention that we already do have one proposal that for the third Wednesday of April, so we will be having a title board meeting on the third Wednesday of April, even regardless of whether there's a motion for rehearing today or not. I think that covers the preliminaries. So with that, let's turn to the one agenda item that we have today. This is 2011-2012 number 19, state taxes. And so if we could hear from proponents first, if you would come forward, Mr. Weiser, identify who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. D. Weiser, I'm here representing the proponents. The proponents are here today, Senator Raleigh Heath and Richard Valenti in the front row, and we're ready to answer your questions.
Are there any questions for the proponents? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Weiser, obviously there were some changes made between the version of the measure filed for review and comment and the version filed for the title board, and I just wanted to confirm with you that those changes were made in direct response to questions raised during the review and comment process.
That's correct, Ms. Eubanks.
Okay. And I think probably the only question I have is in regard to the last sentence in 2477.103.3. And in terms of what you're intending, especially since that language is in terms of the people intend, as to whether this is mandatory or not, and what exactly you intend to accomplish with this language.
Thank you. This sentence is a maintenance of effort provision in our view. It's intended to say that the General Assembly, if this measure should pass, would have to continue to appropriate the amounts for education at the 2011-12 levels. So that obviously the concern of the proponents would be, well, if this tax measure passes and then the General Assembly reduces the General Assembly's appropriation, not much has been accomplished. And so that is the intention. This language is similar to language that exists in other places in Colorado law, most notably the Great Outdoors Colorado Constitutional Amendment. In, of course, in this case, this is an initiated statute as opposed to a constitutional amendment. So, in fact, it is a declaration of the people's intent, since the General Assembly has much more power, as you well know, to amend initiated statutes even after the successful election.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the proponents? Mr. Weiser, how would you describe the single subject?
If you don't mind, Mr. Hobbs, I'd like to call Senator Heath to the podium and let him answer that question.
Okay. Senator Heath.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. very simply, it's just to increase state revenue.
Thank you.
I might ask, since Senator Heath is on a short time frame, having to get back to the legislature, if the title board had any other questions to address to him, if we could do that at this moment, that would be great.
I don't think I have any questions, so I think
thank you.
Ready to move to jurisdictional issues and single subject compliance. And I do have one person signed up, and perhaps I should find out if anybody wishes to argue that the measure does not comply with single subject. Mr. Anderson, do you wish to testify at this time?
Thought I almost missed my chance there. my name is John Anderson. I'm with the law firm of Holland and Hart, and I represent Common Sense Policy Roundtable. We believe that the proposed Initiative 19 violates single subject for the following reasons. First, increases to state income tax rates and an increase to the state sales tax rate are separate subjects. Last month, this board considered whether including multiple income tax increases in one initiative violates single subject. One basis for approving those initiatives under single subject was because each tax increase fell under Colorado's income tax structure. With proposed Initiative 19, the question becomes whether a single initiative can increase tax rates across multiple tax structures and not violate single subject. While Supreme Court precedent is far from clear in the single subject tax initiative arena, one of the more consistent standards applies to the invalidation of unconnected tax reforms that extend across multiple tax structures. In Initiative 1996-4 and Tabor 25, the Supreme Court held that unconnected tax cuts across multiple tax structures violated single subject and do not fit under the broad title, limited government spending. We maintain that the same principle should apply to unconnected sales and income tax increases being included under a broad title, increasing government revenue. The Supreme Court has even provided guidance on the limited circumstances in which a tax reform can be applied across multiple tax structures and not violate single subject. In Tabor 32, the court held that tax reforms applied across multiple tax structures do not violate single subject as long as the underlying tax reform is uniform in content and application. In this case, proposed Initiative 19 sets different tax rate increases to income taxes and sales tax. The different objects and purposes of raising income taxes versus raising sales taxes also creates a number of log-rolling issues. Individuals in the electorate will have very different opinions on whether Colorado's income and sales tax rates should be increased. As just one example, a vast number of Colorado voters do not pay income tax, but most Colorado voters pay sales tax every day. Including distinct tax structures in one initiative may allow proponents to log-roll support from pockets of advocates. Finally, if increasing state revenues through multiple tax structures is allowed under a single subject, it is difficult to understand where the new line is drawn. Can an initiative include increases to sales tax and severance tax under a single subject, or increases to income tax and liquor excise tax? It does not appear that the sales and income tax are any more connected than those examples. Existing single subject precedent provides that unconnected rate revisions across multiple tax structures is prohibited unless the tax reform is uniform in content and application. We believe this standard prohibits increases to income tax rates and the sales tax rate under one initiative. Second, the proposed initiative includes a tax increase and a separate substantive provision that modifies existing state revenue and spending restrictions. Proposed Initiative 19 provides that PK-12 and higher ed shall be funded at 2011-2012 levels, plus revenues generated by the new taxes. We do not challenge the initiative's authority to direct revenues created by the new tax. but creating a new baseline funding level for existing revenues is a separate subject unconnected to the new taxes. More specifically, establishing a new inflexible baseline for PK-12 funding is a separate subject, and creating a first-time funding baseline for higher education is a separate subject. Currently, Amendment 23 sets the floor for PK-12 funding according to an inflation-based formula. However, Amendment 23 has a mechanism that allows the legislature to forgo an annual increase if revenues fall below a certain level. Proposed Initiative 19 revises this existing revenue and spending framework by creating a new and inflexible PK-12 funding baseline locked in at 2011-2012 levels, regardless of available tax revenues. Even if state revenues fall sharply, the initiative requires this baseline funding from existing state revenue sources. It is also significant to note that local taxes make up 32-40% of total PK-12 funding. So this initiative extends a new funding obligation level to revenues that must be collected by local governments under the School Finance Act. In terms of higher education, this initiative would also create a first-time floor for post-secondary education. The question of whether to set minimum funding levels for state higher education is itself a separate subject that has been debated in depth at the Capitol and across the state. The question of whether a higher ed funding baseline should be set based on existing state resources is a separate subject from any considerations related to new taxes. Taking PK-12 and higher education together, proposed Initiative 19's minimum education funding obligation on existing state revenues would likely mandate defunding other state programs. PK-12 funding accounts for 41% of the general fund. Higher education accounts for 11% of the general fund. So proposed Initiative 19 would essentially lock into place 52% of the state's general fund based on existing revenue sources. Considering 29% of the general fund is already locked into Medicaid, Medicare, what happens if state revenues drastically drop and severe cuts need to be made to the state budget? This is the exact scenario being played out in the Capitol this year. The impact would be that state programs funded out of the remaining small portion of the general fund would bear all state cuts. The Supreme Court has made clear that mandatory reductions in other state programs is a separate subject. Whether Colorado implements such a drastic shift in its state budget restrictions is a separate subject from whether to increase taxes.
Questions for Mr. Anderson? Mr. Anderson, would it be fair to say if proponents have an initiative that where they want to increase funding for public education, they would have to pick a single tax increase? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. Or as a single, I think where the line has been drawn, at least currently, is that it would have to be under a single tax structure, income taxes.
Like income taxes.
Correct.
Or corporate taxes,
correct,
but not both.
And I believe the Supreme Court has been pretty clear that there is a standard when you extend tax reform across multiple tax structures. There is a standard in that regard.
I'm having a little trouble following the argument about baseline funding.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it is properly connected to the measure, because without a mandatory baseline funding provision, the effects of the measure could be nullified, in effect, because the General Assembly could divert existing appropriations that are for public education to other purposes using the new funding of a proposal such as this.
But I also think the Supreme Court has made clear that if an initiative has the impact of reducing funding for other state programs, that is a separate subject, and this would have that impact. I believe it's pretty clear.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak against the measure on single subject grounds? If not, then Mr. Weiser for a response.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. I disagree, obviously, with Mr. Anderson's characterization of the precedent. I think, in fact, Amend Tabor 32 actually supports the notion that we can have tax increases across multiple tax structures. There, the $60 tax credit was applied to six different state and local taxes: telephone tax, specific ownership tax, personal property tax, abatement and refund levies, social service tax levies, and the income tax. So it affected not only multiple tax structures, but different levels of Colorado government. And the Supreme Court struggle in setting a single subject was, in that case, was not with respect to the tax cuts, but it was the other provisions in the measure. And they noted that the tax, applying the tax credit to more than one tax credit is the single purpose of implementation of a tax credit. Similarly, in 1997-98, number 30, the court dealt with a very similar proposal, which dealt with a variety of taxes, utilities, vehicles, income tax, property taxes, and didn't have a problem with that being a single subject. Again, it was the other things in the measure. Initiatives 84 and 85 in the same time frame were the same. And eventually, this board set a title for the measure, which appeared on the ballot in 2000, number 21, which affected a tax credit on a variety of different tax sources. Obviously, a majority of this board last year set a title for Proposition 101, which dealt with lowering income taxes, telecommunication taxes, and motor vehicle taxes. Tabor itself says that you can consolidate into a single question multiple questions so long as it doesn't deal with a constitutional amendment, a charter amendment, or bonded debt. And so it really invites the combination in a single tax question of multiple tax sources if you wish. And I think, in fact, law is such that we could simply ask, shall state taxes be increased $100? And not specify what particular tax is involved, and that would be a sufficient subject and sufficient for Tabor purposes. On the maintenance of effort issue, I don't think there's a separate subject here, and there are multiple examples of this that exist in the law today. I mentioned earlier the Great Outdoors Colorado Amendment. There is the Tobacco Tax Amendment, both of those constitutional amendments. In 2008, this board set a title for a sales tax increase for people with developmental disabilities. And the last part of that question talked about prohibiting reductions in the level of state appropriations in the annual general appropriations bill existing on the effective date of the measure for long-term services for persons with developmental disabilities. So there's plenty of precedent for this kind of an approach. That's it, Mr. Hobson.
Any questions for Mr. Weiser? Mr. Domenico.
Strikes me that you're right that the precedents seem to say that you can tweak, adjust multiple types of taxes, and you can also do something to increase or maybe decrease revenue in certain ways and direct how those changes in revenue will be used or not be used. But can you really do both? Can you both adjust multiple types of taxes, income tax, sales tax, create a corporate tax, and also direct that all this money is going to go into, in this case, spending on education? That seems to me to be, certainly you can do one or the other. You can adjust a certain type of tax like we've done with the severance tax and direct how it's used. And as you say, we've allowed and the court has allowed adjusting multiple types of taxes. But can you really do both? In other words, if people will say, agree with Senator Heath, that yes, we have a problem with state revenue. Let's adjust the tax rates. That's one thing. But then to also say on top of that, and all the money that we're going to do through that broad adjustment is going to go to this one purpose. Is that not a separate subject?
I don't believe so, Mr. Domenico. It seems to me it is an implementation part of the fundamental question of increasing revenues. We have plenty of examples of this having already occurred in Colorado. The tobacco tax amendment is a good example of that. We raised taxes and said that we were going to spend those monies on particular sorts of health activities. And there's a maintenance of effort provision of that amendment as well. As I indicated earlier, Amendment 51 in 2008, a title which this board set, had that same attribute to it. We see it all the time at the local government level, where jurisdictions will say, may we raise your sales tax rate and spend it on X. And in fact, the Supreme Court has said you can't then later deviate from spending it on X, because that would violate the contract effectively you have with the voters.
I don't disagree with that. I certainly think that if you, like in the tobacco tax situation or in those local tax situations, if you say we're going to raise the sales tax or we're going to impose a tax on cigarettes X percent, and we're going to use it for program Y, that's one thing. Is it a problem, though, to both do that and to try to get the revenue from by adjusting multiple types of taxes?
Yeah, I guess I do not think so. I don't see the distinction between raising the sales tax in Boulder County for open space to raising the sales tax and the income tax at the state level for education purposes. The voters are saying we want to raise revenues and we want to spend them on this particular purpose.
So your argument is if you want to raise revenues and spend them on any given purpose, you can raise revenue any way you want to. Yes. And that's a single subject.
Well, take an example. If let's say that what Senator Heath wanted to do was to raise money for the general fund and not specify anything more specific than that, yes, I think that you could raise the income tax, the sales tax, any other tax revenue that goes into the general fund, and you'd be competent to set a title for that, and the Supreme Court would uphold that.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify with regard to the question of single subject compliance? If not, then I'll turn to board discussion. It seems to me that this is a single subject. It seems to me that it's when I compare it to some of the other measures that have been mentioned, and in particular what we did most recently with numbers 13 through 18, this is an easier call, I think, than those measures. Granted, 13 through 18, it was all income taxes, but it was tax increases and reductions because of the earned income tax credit provisions. And so there were a variety of things, and there were other things going on in that measure. I think there was a board or a commission set up to look at implementation. And perhaps more difficult in those measures is that the revenue was devoted to a number of different purposes that weren't necessarily related, such as public safety as well as education. So here we have two different types of tax increases, but it's all for public education. So it seems to me that it strikes me that it's probably an easier call on the single subject question if we're going to be consistent. The maintenance of effort doesn't trouble me. I think that's related to the preserving or promoting the purpose of the measure. So at least based on what I've heard so far, it seems to me the measure is a single subject. Ms. Eubanks?
While I agree with Mr. Anderson that there's not a lot of case law to give us guidance here, it's difficult not knowing how far we can go. You had the tax cut. It was uniform across different types of taxes. Is that the only situation that the court will recognize as a single subject? I don't know that. Am I totally comfortable with the idea that the single subject is concerning state taxes or increasing state revenues? It seems that the scope of that almost makes single subject meaningless if you go with that very broad approach. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that. And the staff draft that I prepared that was available out on the table is sort of going from the end point of the measure in terms of additional funding for education. If that's the single subject of providing funding for education rather than increasing state revenues in general or increasing state taxes in general, I may be more comfortable with that as a single subject, because then in terms of trying to accomplish that outcome, the policy has decision has been made that to raise the amount of revenue that they want to raise, these are the things that need to be done, not exclusive to one type of tax structure in terms of income tax or sales tax, that for whatever reason it needs to be multiple tax structures. So my comfort level on single subject, if we go with increasing state revenues or increasing state taxes, I don't know that I'm very comfortable in framing the single subject that way. If the board would be agreeable to going the direction of increasing funding for education, for public education, with these things then being connected to that increased funding, I think I'm comfortable with that approach. But that's where I am at this point in time.
Mr. Domenico.
Well, I'm also troubled and a bit unsure. As I think I've said in the past, I haven't found much guidance that I find useful in Supreme Court precedents. And so while I appreciate everyone's referring us to various provisions, I don't know that I find them that helpful. I do think that the idea that in some of those cases, it seemed to me that the court was saying, you can cut taxes or you can say, we want to limit government spending. But then if you're also going to have within those measures specifics about things, this program, that program, do this, do that, that would surprise people if you're using this broad single subject of limit government spending, that people might be surprised that when you're cutting their taxes, you're also eliminating this project or that. This seems to be in some ways the flip side of that, that you're trying to raise taxes, adjust all these different tax rates, and raise money for a specific project. And Senator Heath said his single subject was raising state revenues, which doesn't give any hint that, in fact, what you're doing is raising state spending on education and not it allowing anything, allowing it to be spent on anything else, and suggesting, you know, that a voter who was concerned about some other program that's being cut, as Mr. Anderson has said, even or maybe not as being cut but isn't being funded to their satisfaction, would be unable to lobby, could vote for this, and then would find out later they're unable to lobby the legislature to spend the increased revenues on their preferred program. On the other hand, the single subject limitation, in my view, these are plausibly related to each other. No one would be particularly shocked, I don't think, to find out that if you're going to be raising revenue or raising taxes, that you'd be, that it could involve different types of taxes. And using the single subject requirement to sort of try to, one thing that I think the Supreme Court has not entirely consistently, but made it clear enough for me to finally get the message, is the single subject requirement is not a way to try to enforce clarity and complete obviousness on a measure, that just because something may not be clear from to the average voter, that that's essentially up to the opponents to point out, not something the single subject is meant to protect. So I'm a little bit troubled by it. I think if I were starting from scratch on what does a single subject mean, I'd be very troubled by it. But given everything that's gone on since in the last few decades, I think I will vote tentatively that it meets the single subject requirement.
And I'd just like to add that I think Ms. Eubanks' staff draft actually captures more of what I think what I'm picturing as the what may be the single subject. It's, to me, it's more about funding for public education than state taxes. But you know, we are required to clearly express a single subject. So assuming we may get to drafting titles, then we can get into that. But Mr. Domenico,
can I just point out that the fact that we are having difficulty expressing the single subject and coming up with some very different things that are in this case related but aren't necessarily related, gives me pause about whether there really is a single subject here, whether there aren't in fact two things that are related in this case but not necessarily related in general.
Okay. If there's no other discussion, is there a motion? Yes. Ms. Eubanks?
Go ahead if you
want. I'll go ahead and move that the board find that that number 19 comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's move to title setting. We have the staff draft. Ms. Eubanks did an alternative draft, and I think the proponents have an alternative draft. I should also mention that under Tabor, we will need to set the amount of the tax increase for the full, first full fiscal year, and we were provided a fiscal estimate, a revenue impact estimate from the Legislative Council's chief economist. And I believe copies of that are on the table as well. So that would provide us a number, perhaps, for the titles. Mr. Weiser, I would look to you to see how you would like to proceed, if you have a suggestion about a particular draft that you prefer.
I actually didn't know until I arrived that Ms. Eubanks had a draft done. Looking at it, I find it to be great. Really, with only one change that I would suggest, and we had this conversation on 13 through 18, but I think for Tabor purposes, we don't want this dollar amount, whatever it is, to operate as a cap beyond the first full fiscal year. And so in my draft, you'll see that I had put in this language about and by such amounts as are raised annually thereafter until December 31, 2014. And so I would, with that one modification, I would find Ms. Eubanks' draft to be perfectly acceptable.
Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Weiser, and I recall from some earlier measures dealing with just with income tax, we did something similar on the title in terms of this additional language. The one thing that concerns me about your language is putting in the December 31st, 2014 date. And that's because the income tax rate increases are for income tax years 2012, 13, and 14. And income tax year 2014 won't be necessarily completed by December 31st, 2014. And so I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't quite know how to deal with that issue, but that's my concern about having that particular date, because I think there'll be some revenues coming in from your measure after that date.
Fair enough, and that's a good point. Perhaps we would just strike the reference that says until December 31, 2014, because the rest of the ballot title, as you prepared it, makes it clear that this is for limited time.
Well, would it be acceptable to the board to start with Ms. Eubank's alternative draft? We'll put that on the screen
Yes.
Start with that as our working draft and consider what changes would be appropriate. Ms. Eubanks?
Well, then I would propose adding so it'd be on line one after year, insert language, and by such amounts as are raised annually thereafter. By such amounts as are raised annually thereafter. And I would move that language.
I'm not a big fan of this. We did this for 13 through 18, I think. Although it looks like the wording was slightly different. We said by such amounts as are thereafter collected, but the concept either way. I don't know, Mr. Domenico.
Well, I think as I've said before, I probably personally would like for the number to be interpreted as a cap. But since I suspect, as Mr. Weiser says, it's I know it's not intended to be, and I suspect it would not end up effectively being a cap, I appreciate adding this language in an effort to make clear that it will not be a cap except in the first year.
So, is that a second?
So, yeah, I didn't hear a move, but I...
I did.
Oh, okay, yes, then I seconded.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Other changes to the Eubanks alternative draft?
Excuse me.
One of the things that I wanted to raise is that I think I would prefer... we put the amount of the new tax rates in, but we don't say what the current tax rates are. So for me at least, I would prefer to say, like in line four, increasing the rate from 4.63% to 5%. Is there any support for that?
I'm fine. I debated whether to do that or not when I prepared the draft, so I have no problem with that.
In my draft, I had that concept in. Either way is fine with us, frankly.
I think it's helpful. I don't know that it's necessary, but it's helpful.
And I think one thing that's helpful, at least to me, is to sort of see the relative proportion of the increase. People won't know, but it's not a big deal. But I guess then I will move that in line four. And I think I'd like to put in numbers instead of words, because it'll be easier with
That's
the 4.63.
That's fine.
So after taxpayers in line four, say from 4.63% sign, and then strike 5% and put in 5% sign. And then lines, what is now line six, where it says 2-3%. Before the two, well, we could change the 3% to number three and a percent sign. And then after use tax, insert from 2.9% sign to 3% sign. I think that covers it. So I would move that change.
Second.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. One other possible change that I wondered about would be the order of the last three clauses. So we've got, I guess beginning in line 7, a clause that requires that the revenues be spent just for public education. And then next in line 9 is sort of the Tabor provision that the revenues can be spent notwithstanding limitations. And then the third and last clause is kind of the maintenance of everything. I wonder if the Tabor provision should be moved to the end. I think that's what we did with 13 through 18. Sort of the allowing the revenues to be spent, the voter approved changes, I think. I wonder if that should just come at the end. Ms. Eubanks.
And again, I'm fine with that.
We have no objection to that.
Let me suggest then we move a clause, Ceci. I guess beginning at line 9, that clause that begins with allowing through the semicolon in the next line, move that to the end. And then fix up our conjunctions and semicolons with a period at the end.
Yeah.
In line 10, strike the word and before specifying. I think that does it. I'll move that change.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the Eubanks alternative? Mr. Domenico.
I think we at least need to discuss a little bit the single subject, or... I mean, we made a fairly substantive change there to now, from being a revenue measure, this is an education measure. And I know we discussed that a little bit, but it just seems to me, I'd like to make sure we're all really comfortable with having done that. And I also am curious, assuming we do leave that language about the word temporary, whether that's should be there, I guess. But I mean, I'm a little troubled, I guess, by that language of the subject, because there are lots of ways you could enact a temporary increase in funding for public education. And yes, the way it's done here is explained later. But as the original, as the measure itself says, as Senator Heath said, as the original staff draft said, as the proponent's revised draft said, originally this was a measure about raising taxes, raising revenue streams. And now that gets pushed to just kind of an implementation of this other issue of providing a temporary increase in funding for public education. And I don't know what that means. I just am not sure that we should make such a major change so lightly. Although I do think it is as Ms. Eubanks recognized. If you say this is a measure about education, it's probably easier to say that there's a single subject. But I want to think about that a little bit more, I suppose.
Ms. Eubanks.
And I think Mr. Domenico's made some good observations. It might be possible to state the single subject something about, because really it's a temporary increase in tax, and so whether it's providing a temporary increase in certain state taxes, which is similar to language in some of the other drafts, for additional public education funding. I mean, whether that would be a more accurate statement that gives notice of the tax implications involved with providing additional funding for education.
That made sense to me, I think, what you were suggesting there.
So maybe we could take a stab at, on line 3, after where it says increase in before funding. So it would read temporary increase in certain state taxes. And would actually strike funding. And then before public, insert additional. And then after education and before the comma, insert funding.
And I don't particularly like that. I like what we had. I like what you had, Ms. Eubanks. Because we've already said in line 1, Ceci, if you could make, you know, pull us back, we've already talked about the taxes are being increased. And then to refer to certain state taxes, I don't think adds anything. You know, and maybe I should ask Mr. Weiser for a comment about this. I'm really not looking at the singles. And this, I think what we're trying to do here is comply with the requirement that we express the single subject. And I do believe that it's not really state taxes or tax increases. I think it's increased funding for public education. That, to me, is more likely to be a single subject and a better expression. But so I kind of liked saying taxes shall be increased by a certain amount by amendments to the statutes providing a temporary increase in funding for public education. That seems pretty clear to me, although I would have changed the word providing to concerning. But other than that, I thought we had a pretty good expression. But again, my premise is that a better expression of the single subject is increased funding or temporary increase in funding for public education. It's not really a tax measure so much as increased funding for public education. Mr. Weiser, do you agree or disagree?
In a way, it's probably hard to divorce them, right? We have a tax increase and a purpose for the tax increase. Now, one could bring forward a measure that's just a tax increase and leave it to the General Assembly's discretion about how to spend it. One could probably bring forward a measure that says the General Assembly ought to spend the money they have in a different way. We're doing a little bit of both here. But having said all that, I don't think we have a preference as to Ms. Eubanks' original drafting or her alternative drafting. Either one would be acceptable to us.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Domenico.
Well, given that any tax measure revenue-raising measure is going to have that initial TABOR-required language. You're always going to have that slight redundancy that I think you noted, Mr. Hobbs. And given that the proponent, Senator Heath, told us it was actually a revenue measure, whether you think it's actually an education measure, Senator Heath says it's a revenue measure. I think, Mr. Weiser, it's really both. I do think you could have an education measure that didn't increase taxes, that says we need more spending on education, and if that means General Assembly, you cut other things, then that's what you do. This says essentially the opposite of that, that you keep everything, you keep education at least the same, and we're raising revenue. So I think I prefer this in the sense that it reflects what Senator Heath told us a little bit better, and that it reflects the reality that I don't think you can divorce the fact that it is a tax measure and it's an education measure. And if that's a problem, it's a single subject problem. But since we already got past that, I prefer to try to have both the education angle and the tax angle in the statement.
So, Ms. Eubanks, did you move that change?
I didn't, but I'm willing to do so. I so move.
Okay, and Mr. Domenico, that's a second?
I'll second it, yes.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. No. That motion carries 2-1. How do you feel about changing providing to concerning?
Be my guest.
We'll see if that works. I'll move that we change providing to concerning.
Second.
Thank you.
I debated that one too.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Domenico.
Are we sure everything in here is temporary? Is that accurate to say that the tax increases are all temporary and the additional funding is all temporary? The measure seems fairly clear on the income tax, right? This only applies the tax years prior to 2015. And the corporate tax, I think it reads differently, but I think it does the same. Is a sales tax?
Yes, it expires December 31, 2014.
Okay, so it just says through December 31.
And the same for the use tax in Section 5.
So everything... Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was...
The only reason the wording is different, we were trying to follow the existing
commentary. Right, I'm sure there's a good reason for it. I just was not entirely comfortable for the same reasons. You know, we had a little bit of trouble with the what was the language with the putting an end date on it that we weren't quite certain. So if everybody else is comfortable with it, I guess I'm comfortable.
Ms. Eubanks?
And just from being very familiar with these statutes, because income tax years, and especially for corporations, it's not unusual for their corporate year to begin in October.
Mm-hmm.
So their 2014 tax year won't start until October of 2014. So their taxes probably won't even be paid until almost a year later. And that's the problem of income
right.
tax years versus calendar years.
Right.
And that's why there's the difference between the provisions dealing with income tax and the sales tax provisions. So I'm it's totally consistent and I'm comfortable with that. And then in terms of on the funding side, because everything in the first provision of the measure talks about the additional revenue resulting from these changes being used for education funding and on top of current funding for education, that once those additional revenues aren't coming in anymore because the tax changes have expired, then I think the funding is also temporary. So I'm very comfortable with that.
It is the proponent's intention that this is simply a 3-year temporary funding fix.
Okay, I'm comfortable then. I just wanted to make sure.
We need to fill in the blank amount in line one. The revenue estimate was that we got was 536.1 million. Mr. Weiser, are the proponents comfortable with that figure?
Yes.
Okay. And I would, or Ms. Eubanks.
No, go ahead.
I would move then we strike the blank and insert $536.1 million.
Second.
Any further discussion? Mr. Domenico?
I still like the idea I brought up once before of putting the whole all the zeros in there too, but I think I was voted down on that before, so I'll just note that I like the idea and move on.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the Eubanks alternative? Not then. I'll move that we adopt the draft as it's shown on the screen, with the understanding that the changes we've made in the title there would also apply to the ballot title and submission clause, which is simply the same except that it's in the form of a question. Mr. Domenico?
Do we really need that comma in line two?
Are you?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't think so. Consider that an editorial improvement. But it might be helpful to read it through, and for purposes of the record, I'll just go ahead and read what we have on the screen. State taxes shall be increased $536.1 million annually in the first full fiscal year, and by such amounts as are raised annually thereafter by amendments to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a temporary increase in certain state taxes for additional public education funding, in connection therewith, increasing the rate of the state income tax imposed on all taxpayers from 4.63% to 5% for the 2012 through 2014 income tax year, increasing the rate of the state sales and use tax from 2.9% to 3% for a period of 3 years commencing on January 1, 2012, requiring the additional revenues resulting from these increased tax rates be spent only to fund public education from preschool through 12th grade and public post-secondary education, specifying the intent that the allocation of additional tax revenues be in addition to and not substituted for monies otherwise appropriated for public education from preschool through 12th grade and public post-secondary education for the 2011-12 fiscal year, and allowing the additional tax revenues to be collected, kept, and spent, notwithstanding any limitations provided by law. If there's no other changes, then the motion is to adopt the titles accordingly. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 19. The time is 1:59 p.m. And that's our business, so we are adjourned. Thank you.